on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook.
The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
Welcome to the Sportscast, June 3rd, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can listen to us there 24/7. Visit our website, thesportscast.net, also on X at The Sportscast One, also Instagram, and check out our app, The Sportscast. Finals, Champions League and NBA is in this season, this week, and join us all the way from Northeast United States, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to The Sportscast.
Thank you, Santi. Greetings from Maine, where it's summer.
It is summer. It's official. How's the temperature now? Is it still cool or is it warm?
Oh no, it's beautiful out there. And I played golf yesterday in 83 degree weather at 3:30 in the afternoon. Couldn't have been nicer.
You can't beat that at all. Well, anyways, this past weekend, Real Madrid wins another Champions League, defeating Borussia Dortmund 2-0 at Wembley Stadium. Goals by Carvajal and Vinny Jr. These two heroes from Madrid defeated Dortmund. It was not a surprise. I had a feeling Real Madrid was going to win this match. But what were your thoughts, Hal?
I don't think anyone was too surprised. This is what they do. Dortmund had a chance to win this game. They could have gone ahead by 2-3 goals in the first 10-15 minutes. They hit the post. They missed some sitters. Not sitters. Alone in on goalers. And couldn't pull it off. And the longer the game went, as you say, the more it was clear that Madrid was going to win. It wasn't the most compelling soccer content that I've seen because the middle hour of the game really wasn't that interesting. But ultimately, in front of a crowd that wanted to be entertained, Real Madrid entertained them. And the two goals were good. Carvajal's goal, I mean, I don't quite know how he went unmarked. He's probably the smallest guy on the field. Got a free header to put them ahead on a corner kick. And the second goal was just a matter of time as Dortmund immediately, you know, went forward in greater numbers and exposed themselves in the back. And here we are again with another Real Madrid Champions League victory. And we've been here before.
Yes, we've been here before. Carvajal scored in the 74th minute and Vinny Jr. 83rd minute. And as Hal said, the first half, I don't know what it was. It felt like it was bad luck. Dortmund hit the post. They had 2-3 chances. They could have gone far, but was not enough. Dortmund had a good season. Let's get this, you know, get this straight. Had a good playoff run, Champions League run, being PSG. But what was lacking there? Was there a striker lacking? Midfield defense but
this team scores goals. I mean, I'm a little surprised that Dortmund didn't score. And you know, if you watched the first 20 minutes of this game, you'd have been surprised as well. They get forward. They are pretty clinical in front of goal. They've got a lot of weapons. And even though they're fifth in the Bundesliga this year, they've scored goals wherever they've played. They've given up goals wherever they've played, and that's why they're fifth. But, you know, increasingly, it's a very, very small number of clubs who can compete for a domestic league title along with competing in the Champions League or the Europa League, going deep into a European competition because that requires a massive roster where you can rotate guys and not burn out your team and diminish your chances to win domestically. And by the same token, diminish your chances to go far, you know, in a knockout tournament like the Champions League, if you are fighting tooth and nail and using up your human resources to contest a domestic league. It's a very small number of teams that can honestly do that without destroying either campaign. I don't know that Dortmund is big enough to do that. They played perfectly well. They could have won this game if they had gotten ahead. They didn't. And in and of itself, that is basically self-explanatory. But are they as big enough to compete on? But in two competitions at once? No. And there are very few teams that are. Real Madrid is one. Bayern is another. Man City is another. Maybe Juventus is big enough now to do that. Not sure that they are. But, geez, it just gets smaller and smaller, this group. And now Mbappe is going to Real, and we could be back here again in 12 months.
Yeah, and I want to add another team that you mentioned in that list. I think Chelsea on paper could potentially be in that route. Obviously, they won a couple of years ago with Pulisic. But if they put their things together, they could win a Champions League soon, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, you said Chelsea, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I think any of the English Premier League teams, the top teams, have the money to go after something like this, a double that we've described. What is a little bit of a catch is that while they have a lot of money, they are busy spending that money on very expensive players. If they didn't have to splurge on a player for 200 million euros, then they'd have more money to spend on squad players that allow them to compete in both competitions. It's a little bit of a catch unless you've got Qatari money. Then you don't care. If you've got Saudi sovereign wealth fund, you don't care. And however Real Madrid is doing it with the smoke and mirrors, they don't seem to care. We've seen what happened to Barcelona, who purported not to care, but now they care. They can't quite do it with their finances being what they are. So, yeah, a lot of teams in England have a bunch of money, but in order to keep accepting the largesse from the Golden Goose, they've got to do well and stay up in the English League. And if they don't spend on that, they fall, and maybe they go down, and then everything is ruined. So I agree with you. Chelsea could do that. Any team from England could probably swing it. But look at a team like Tottenham. They finished fifth. Do they have a squad big enough to go in and compete in Europe every other week? I don't think so. They've got Premier League money and don't quite have enough to do that. But, I think they're probably, as we speak, in the midst of gathering that money so they can.
Yeah. Like Hal said, English clubs for sure have a lot of potential there, but they got to focus on the Premier League, and that takes away attention from the Champions League. And then if you focus on the Champions League, it takes away attention from the Premier League, the tough league to be focused on. Of course, compared to the Liga and League One, you have some leeway, some wiggle room to do both, because the Liga and the league are a little easier for these top teams, like that.
And just to add another layer of intrigue to it, if you're a good team in the French or the Spanish league, what is your main source of income? Well, you've got the TV money from your own league, but it's not anywhere near what the English income is. So it's hard for them to compete in that way in Europe. Well, the second largest source of income for many of these clubs is selling their best players to Bournemouth or selling their best players to Newcastle so that they can compete with Qatari money. So what does that do to the German teams, the French teams, the Spanish teams' ability to compete in Europe? It lessens it. So it just piles on the dynamic we're talking about. It's a little grim, and it's a little Super League-ish, which everyone has said they're not doing, but it seems to be happening anyway.
Yeah, and a good example of a club that sells and high players is Borussia Dortmund.
Yes,
they sold, I think, this guy, Jude Bellingham, I think bought him for $10 million and sold him for $100 million to Real Madrid. So that type of club knows what to do. I mean, as their business, of course, they made it to the finale in London this past weekend. So they're very lucky. I don't know about lucky. They're good players. Let's get that right. You mentioned Mbappe joining Real Madrid does not make anything better. I mean, makes Real Madrid much better. Plus, Endrick will be joining also soon. Your thoughts of Mbappe joining Real Madrid? It feels like he's won the World Cup. He hasn't won the Champions League because PSG has the money but has not been able to go all the way. But what does this do for Real Madrid and Mbappe?
Well, it makes Real Madrid better. I think we can agree on that. They don't have a specific striker in that form, although you could argue that Mbappe has no peer. He's a unique striker. And he does come, he prefers to come at the goal from the left side, and they've got Vinny Jr. over there. So someone's going to have to move, I would think, but I don't think anyone's worried about them figuring this out. And that's what makes Real Madrid so difficult to bet against, is that they'll trundle along in La Liga. Maybe they'll lose a few matches. They'll be fifth at Christmas. Then they'll go on a tear. They'll win the league or contest that league. But by the time the knockout games are played in the Champions League, they'll have figured it out. They'll be very difficult to oust. I still am, you know, I think we have to think back to just how closely Real Madrid came to going out against Man City. They really probably should have. They won a penalty shootout in a game that they were outplayed. I thought in a two-legged tie where they were outplayed by a better side. But that's not how it works. Here we are. It doesn't bother me that Real Madrid wins these games. I'm sort of nonplussed by the idea that they keep doing it. They won some games in the knockout portion of this tournament that they had no business winning. And that's purely because they're Real Madrid and no one else is. So I think we have to give them props for that. Does it make it a better and more compelling property? I don't think so. Doesn't make me want to watch it more. It just makes it sort of more of a super league where the outcome is a foregone conclusion. And some people don't seem to want that. I don't, but some people are all for it. The media are in a weird position here too, because you know what happens when you have a dynasty or when you have a group of teams that is smaller that you're writing about for these big games. Those are easier stories to write. They love the familiarity of the Super League. And that's a bit of a shame. I don't know. It's a difficult question. I'd love to see. I long for the days when a team could come out of the Czech Republic and get to the quarters, the semis. But that just feels ever more remote.
Greece did it back in 2004 in the Euros.
Well, they won the Euros. I mean, it shows you it can happen. But that was 20 years ago. I'm not sure that could happen now. Greek football. Let's give them some props. They won the Conference League. Olympiacos beat.
Atlanta,
very good side.
Conference League,
yeah, very good side. Then
first and Greek club to win a European tournament.
Now this is the third. This is the third tier of European tournaments, but still, I saw the highlights from that game. That crowd did not care. They were going ape shit. The Greeks love their football. I loved watching that scene. The just pure flares when you have the aerial shots of the packed stadiums where there's flares everywhere. You're like, is that crowd on fire? It's an amazing sight.
Real quick. Mourinho is joining Turkish club Hunter Branch. I think how you say it.
Yes.
This is Fenerbahce. Sure. Yeah. Fenerbahce. I don't know how many clubs he's been with, but he's been a lot. Maybe he's 10th by now. What do you think about that move?
I don't care.
They're a Champions League type of club, by the way, I think.
I don't care, and I don't I'm just glad he's not gonna be in the running to run the U.S. team should Berhalter falter at this summer's Copa. I'd love to get Klopp for that job. I'm not sure anyone of that stature is even interested. But if Jose is floating around, pitching his wares at that time, it could get dicey, or that decision would have to be dealt with. I'm glad he's at Fenerbahce. I don't wish him ill or well. I don't care how he does.
Exactly. He also managed your club Tottenham one time, which he took you guys to the FA Cup. No. He took it to the EFL Cup final, right?
I think so. I mean, it was entertaining. It was an entertaining shit show of a tenure. I don't think anybody wants to do it again. And I think that's essentially how people feel about Jose when he's gone now. You know, we've lived through that. His abilities at one time were unquestioned. He never produced really attractive football, but they won, and they won at the highest levels. I think he's waiting around, and I think that fellow who was coaching the Portuguese national team, Santos, has left, and they didn't pick Jose. I'm sure he's pissed. That's the sinecure job that I'm sure he'd like, and that team is very good. Perennial dark horse, and we'll see how they do with the Euros. They're loaded, but for some reason, they don't want Jose to coach the team, and I can't blame them. He's a difficult character.
The big decision that I've not heard yet, Hal, has been from Manchester United about head coach Ten Hag. He's not been let go yet. It's been a week.
God bless him. He did what he needed to do to maybe save his job. He won a tournament. He beat Man City to do it. They were probably ready to fire him the next day. Now then they're saying, well, now what do we do? You know, I'm not a Man City fan, and they've had so many coaches through there. I can't be bothered to worry about it. I mean, this is the team that finished what, sixth or seventh in the Premiership. We have this idea of Man City, or rather Man United, as being an elite club. They're just not. I think they've got elite talent, but they have not been able to parlay that for a long time. These two youngsters, Mainu and the other guy who scored late in the season and scored in the cup final, on any other team, you would say, wow, those guys are going to grow into great players. Man City, or rather Man U, finds these teams, these players all the time. And what happens to them? Anthony, Rashford, they've got, they're loaded with talent and they don't win. So I don't know. I'm not upset about it because I'm not a fan of theirs. It's like, you know, rooting for the Red Sox or the Yankees. It's it's easy to do. So I don't wish them ill, but I don't wish them well. And I'm sure they'll figure something out and it won't go well.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Man United. It's been a week. I think he's staying. If I had to take a guess or put some money into it, I think he's staying. All right.
I will say this, Santi. The choice of Ten Hag was weird. He came from Ajax. What does Ajax do? Well, they're like Dortmund. They create players. They raise up. They have an incredible academy, and then they sell them off and they compete that way. That is not what Man United does. Man United buys the players they want. They don't create them necessarily. So why this guy was even in charge of this team, I don't know. And it didn't go great.
There you have it. There is our football news of the week. There's more football coming on later in the show. Let's go to the NBA Finals. Boston Celtics versus the Mavericks. This is the showdown. Couple storylines here. Game one is this Thursday. How the last time we spoke, we did not know who was the champion in the West. Now we know it is the Mavericks. You're on the showdown.
I'm really excited for it. I think the Mavericks are an incredibly interesting opponent for anyone, but especially the Celtics. I really enjoyed the Minnesota series. I've enjoyed all the Western playoffs. They've been very hotly contested, whereas the Celtics have really waltzed through the Eastern Conference. Everyone was hurt. None of the teams that could have challenged them were able to because of those injuries. They went 12-2. You can't blame them. They've played well. But now we have a matchup that I think is really going to be a honking good time. Kyrie's coming back to Boston. Battle of two great backcourts, one defensive, one offensive. And tactically, it's going to be very interesting to see how they shake up. Jason Kidd has done an amazing job coaxing these performances out of basically a two-man team with a bunch of cast-offs in the front court. And geez, they're a defensive juggernaut. And I never thought I would say that about any team led by Luka Doncic, who usually doesn't really care much for that type of thing. I can't wait for it to start. I'm just a bum that we have to wait till Thursday in order to start.
And everyone's complaining about this like week-long break.
Well, that I'm not so – that's the reality that, you know, they have to reserve these, you know, these venues, the Boston Garden, American Airlines Arena. They have to – they can't just say, oh, yeah, we need that for the basketball game. Now it's going to be a week earlier because you guys won a series 4-1 and not 4-3. You can't do that. You have to have it all sync up at the end. And so that doesn't bother me. What does bother me is – 3 days between every game, so that we have to wait you know, 3 days between every game. I don't like that. When you get into a series, I want it to come every other night and let them rest, let them travel. But three games, I think they maintained through this series, and that annoys me. But I can't get mad. They have to, you know, that they waited a week to start it. That who knew that the Celts would sweep and that Dallas would win 4-1. We all thought those would be longer series.
Exactly. One key factor of this series is the return of Porzingis. How critical is that? Is that you guys need Porzingis back, or you guys can do it without him?
I think we could win without him, but he's super critical because I think he gives us a foolproof way to pull both of the centers that Dallas plays out of the middle of the court, where they're excellent rim protectors. When Porzingis is posting up, when he's setting up camp outside, someone's got to go guard him. Maybe they put someone else on him like PJ Washington, but he's going to get that shot off against PJ Washington whenever he likes. I don't know what the deal is with Porzingis. I live in New England. I follow this stuff very closely. Nothing has been revealed to me. I really thought Porzingis would come back for the final game against the Pacers just to get him some game time, but they did not bring him out. So I assume he just wasn't ready. So we'll just have to see how fit he is. And if he didn't play in the first games, it wouldn't shock me. He's sustained this calf injury. That is since the Durant went down with an Achilles injury after coming back from a very similar calf injury. Everyone is treating these guys with kid gloves. This is a 7'6" guy whose feet and legs are already weirdly constructed and not particularly durable. So they're not taking any unnecessary chances, but here's a chance to win an NBA title. So I'm assuming he's going to play. When he does, I couldn't say. They've kept it very quiet. There's been no leaks. No one knows whether he's going to be able to play game one or not.
Yeah, it's quite interesting take there. As you were saying, you know, Kevin Durant, since that Kevin Durant calf injury turned to an Achilles injury, that's been a huge issue when these players get a calf injury. So, okay, let's just cool it off. Let's make sure things fully heal. He was going to show up against the Indiana series, but they did not extend it because they kind of got it over a little bit earlier than they thought. So, we'll see what happens. Can you guys stop Luka and Kyrie, Hal?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Luka is the more salient issue. And if there is a single team in the NBA who can deal with Luka, it's the Celtics. Why do I say that? Well, first of all, they put Jaylen Brown on him in the past. And Jaylen Brown is a superb one-on-one defender who's plenty big enough to deal with Luka straight up. You're not trying to front him. You're not ever going to get behind him. That's what's fascinating about Luka, is that he gets his opponent, he gets his marker, if you will, to harken back to the soccer terminology, on his butt, and he keeps him there. And then he sort of slowly tacks his way to the basket until someone else comes away from their man and he throws a lob to that person and they dunk. He's very, very good, and I don't think you can stop Luka. You can only hope to contain him. But between Jaylen Brown and Derek White, who might be the best defensive guard in the league, and Jrue Holiday, who used to be the best defensive guard in the league and it's still very good, we have three guys we can play on him. And whoever's not playing him can guard Kyrie as well as anyone can guard Kyrie. It's hard to guard him too. You know, we have three people to guard two guys, and I think that's pretty good. So I don't know how much Peyton Pritchard is going to get to play in this game, in this series. I think the moment he shows up, Kyrie's going to hunt him down and take him to the basket. But Peyton shouldn't feel bad. He does that to most everyone. I like the Celtics in this series because of that capability on our defensive end. We're going to win this series with our defense, not by shooting threes. They're too good to basically, end games early. It drives me crazy the way the Celtics and other teams in the NBA, they rely so heavily on the three-point shot. You get into the second half of these games and you can just tell that they're sort of trying to end games early. Like, oh, if we just hit this three, these guys will be deflated. If we just hit this three, and they just keep taking the threes, and ultimately they miss, two out of three of them. And I think it backfires on them. But, if they make enough of these shots over the course of a 7-game series, which is what the data says they should do, I think the Celtics will win, but I like their ability to defend the Mavericks. They're going to have all sorts of options in the front court because Gafford and Derek Lively, if he's healthy, don't really do anything offensively. Derek Jones, who has played very, very well, like the second coming of Scottie Pippen, a left-handed Scottie Pippen. He's a very good defender. That's what he's on the court to do, but he's hitting 40% of his threes. So if he does that, they'll be harder to beat. If PJ Washington keeps making corner threes, they'll be harder to beat. But ultimately, I just think we have more weapons offensively and defensively. But who knows? I mean, I'm watching the series because I don't know who will win. That's why we watch, right?
That's why you watch. Has to be played out. By the way, season series is Boston beat the Mavs 2 games in a row this past season. So that is a good stat for you guys to have. But it is playoff basketball.
Yep.
It is the finals, so things are different. So we'll see what happens. Looking forward to it. We'll get house predictions towards the end of the show and see how much will Boston win by and things like that. Let's go into the Stanley Cup finals. Oilers oust the Stars to advance to the finale against the Florida Panthers. Edmonton, they beat the Stars 2-1 to win the series 4-2. What do you think about this matchup between Edmonton and Florida?
Well, it's the immovable object versus the irresistible force. The Oilers are a great scoring team. The Panthers are a great defensive team back in the Stanley Cup Finals for the second straight year. They've both earned it. I'm rooting for the Oilers, and I hope they win because Canada will go apeshit if they do. And I want that to happen. I want to have another Olympiakos-type moment there on the high prairies of Edmonton. A Canadian team hasn't won the Stanley Cup since 1993. So I think all of Canada feels as I do. Even Calgary Flames fans probably are rooting for Edmonton here. And we'll just have to see what happens. I mean, year in and year out, the NHL playoffs produce really nip-and-tuck series. And I'm sure that we'll get a good one here as well. The Panthers, they beat the Bruins. They beat my Bruins. I watched them do it. They just shut you down. And they were able to shut down the Rangers, who looked unbeatable against Carolina and other very good teams in this playoff. So I don't know what to say. I want the Oilers to win. I don't have any feelings toward the Panthers one way or the other except respect, because they hit you and they shut you down. They take away everything in mid-ice and no one can get through. I watched it happen to the Bruins. So I hope the Oilers can get ahead in the series and win it.
I think Florida should have it easier than versus a year ago when they faced the Vegas Knights.
Florida can play with anybody because they don't go out and score 6 goals. Their whole game is built around checking and containing other teams. And they have just enough offense to win, and they've got an amazing keeper. Bobrovsky is amazing. He's been very, very good. He's probably better than Skinner, who is the Edmonton goalie, but any team that shows up in the Stanley Cup Finals has a hot goalie. Who's hotter? Well, Bobrovsky probably is, and he's a giant. So we'll see what happens. I'll admit, I'm not sure whether who's got home ice in that series.
Florida does. They have game one.
Interesting.
Yeah, so.
Well,
but for the NHL, they don't split. Like, is it like a 2-3-2 format?
No.
Or or they just go back and forth?
Only the NBA does that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because the travel's tough.
Yeah, and it's I wrote about this in Generation Zero. You know, when you have Edmonton in the league, that's quite a trip.
I was going to ask you, that's all when you're Vancouver, isn't it?
Well, I was thinking about this when I wrote the first book is that back in the day, they added a team called the Edmonton Brickmen to the old Western Alliance. This is, you know, the mid 80s when soccer was in very tough shape all over North America. Well, when you add Edmonton to a team to a league that has San Diego in it, as the Western Alliance did, that's a 1700 mile trip each way. I mean, and we're talking, I don't think they did they fly? Who flew to soccer games in 1986? Those teams had no money. But these guys, that's not an issue, but it is a long way. And it's not like they're just going to zip back and forth like they would from, you know, even Florida to Vegas is much more reasonable than Florida at Edmonton. But you know what? The Canadians make up for it. They're going to show up. They're going to be partying in the streets, win or lose, because this is their sport. And I'm rooting for you, Canada. I'm rooting for you.
There you have it. Florida Panthers, Edmonton coming up for the Stanley Cup. Emma Hayes, first game for the U.S. women's national team, defeated South Korea 4-0. Mm-hmm. Mallory Swanson and Tierna Davison scored two goals apiece to give Hayes a resounding victory, Al, in her first game in charge of the American women team since her appointment was announced in November. Good start for Emma Hayes.
Yeah, very good. Not just because they won, but they played attractive football. And they actually mixed up a very veteran roster with some new faces, which, as I've written in the past, they really needed to do. If I'm not mistaken, there's only, I think they have three more friendlies before the Olympics in July, which is just not very many. And the next one is this week, again, against South Korea. I can't believe they couldn't find a second opponent for this window. They're playing South Korea twice, you know, not a great team. So I'm not sure what a 4-0 result really tells us, but I can't wait to watch the Olympic tournament. I think it's going to be fascinating. It's sort of been lost in the shuffle because you've got Copa America and the Euros on the men's side around the same time. And the men's
big time third wheel.
Big time. Yeah. But you know, so is the men's tournament, but I'm looking forward to seeing all of those. It will be interesting to me to see what kind of exposure those tournaments get. Paris is not, you know, that far away. It's not in Asia where the time difference is going to be terrible. I mean, if they play some night games in Paris, we'll be able to watch them, you know, 3 or 4 in the afternoon, like we're used to doing.
Should be better.
Yeah, it is. And it just shows how far we've come in this country. I'm sure that, I bet my bottom dollar that they will make that available, because that's good ratings for NBC. Back in 1988, when the U.S. Olympic team, that became the 1990 World Cup team, they really sort of had their coming out party at that Olympics. We didn't see any of that. I remember wanting to see it. It wasn't on. And I remember talking to a sports writing colleague of mine who worked at Soccer America. They had to go to a bar in Berkeley after hours. You know, it was a rugby bar with a satellite dish. And they basically, the owner just flipped them the keys and said, shut it on, you know, lock it up when you leave. But that was the only way to see those games, was on Mexican satellite radio in the middle of the night. We've come a long way, baby. We've come a long way.
Oh, and by the way, for the U.S. men's, the only one overage player they selected was Walker Zimmerman.
Yeah.
So they didn't get like two other ones. So it's quite interesting.
Well, the under 23 teams are a hybrid. You know, there's no World Cup for the under 23s anymore. They put them together for these Olympic teams, and that's a big tournament. But Zimmerman, I don't think, is going to see much time for the U.S. At the Copa America this summer. So why not have that experience and go and lead a group of younger guys? He'll play. He'll be an asset to that team, I think. But I can't claim any great knowledge of the U.S. under 23 players. They've got some interesting guys who I know from Liga MX and from MLS.
Caleb Cowell,
Cowell is a very good player, and I'd have to look at the roster here to remember, but enough familiar names from MLS and Liga MX and some from Europe to make it quite interesting, I think. Let's hope. I hope they win the first game.
It's
so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And to read them out, they got forwards Paxton Aronson. It's Cowell, that plays for Guadalajara. Griffin. Yeah, a lot of MLS players. Kevin Perez, he's good. He's from Wolfsburg. He got selected. Right. And then in the midfield, no one too familiar. Cole Passon from Colorado. And then in the defense, that's it. Walker Zimmerman. And then Slonina from Chelsea. He got selected. So.
Right. And the keeper from Schultes from Columbus, right, is, I think, the other keeper. And he's shown himself to be quite good. So I can't believe they won't be competitive. The days are gone when the U.S. is unable to field competitive teams at any age group. So, you know, one of these days we're going to win something, and it's going to be great. Maybe this is the summer we get a couple of gold medals, or any medal out of the men's group would be fabulous.
Yeah, because this is like the first Olympics we've qualified in a while, right? Like, we went MIA for a bit.
Weren't we? Well, I would have to defer to you on that. I'm trying to remember, you know. It's, I know that they have qualified, but they didn't do well. Was it 2012? Has it been since then?
It felt like till now. Like, last time, maybe 2012. But I do not, because I remember, oh, yeah, we did not make it this time. We did not make it this time. And that's for the past 8-10 years, I felt like.
I honestly don't remember. All I can think of are the gaps in the, you know, from historic, you know, historic times. I know that the U.S. qualified at 72. I've written about that. Yeah. And I know they didn't qualify again until 1988. But again, that was such a different time. We have such higher expectations. But it's also, all the qualifications, you know, historically are sort of the way that they are set up. They used to divide CONCACAF into Mexico, Canada, and the United States would play off. And then all the other teams would play off. And then, so basically, if you couldn't beat Canada or Mexico, the U.S. couldn't qualify for anything. You know, those two teams had to screw up somehow for us even to get to the final stage of qualifiers, where you might play, you know, Trinidad or Tobago or Costa Rica. They don't seem to do that anymore, which I think is right and proper. But I can't claim any great knowledge about this Olympic team or their qualification process. I'm glad that they did. And I'm happy to have something to watch this summer. You know, if I can shoehorn it in, there's a lot of soccer to watch.
There's going to be a lot of soccer, man. This is more than the Premier League amount. It's going to be. So I want to buy FUBU, actually, because I have Sling TV. So I have to get FUBU because Ox is on FUBO and not on Sling, so I have to upgrade a bit. But it's okay. I mean, it is what it is. And then the Euros and the Copa America are in one network.
Yep.
It's crazy. So, I also want to highlight Kramashki from Inter Miami. He got selected to this this U.S.
Right, right. Good young player.
So, good young player. Pretty excited. He was actually between Argentina and the U.S., but I think he got the – got the red flag from Argentina. Yeah, I don't think we need you, but you know, they're full of talent itself.
They've got enough guys.
Yeah. It feels like if you don't make it, if the national team has decided by the time you're 18, it's pretty much like you're kind of like off the
yeah, radar. I've written this and it's still true. In the past, you know, during the NASL years, people talk about what a great boon it was for American soccer, and it was. But it was as much a boon to players in the Western Hemisphere could come and use NASL, for example, as leverage to get better money out of the Costa Rican club they were playing for or the Peruvian club they were playing for. And MLS is even more markedly a boon to players like Thiago Almada, another Argentine who has made a name for himself in Cincinnati. And I don't know whether he can't get a game at Boca Juniors, but he doesn't care. He's making good money. And this is true for, you know, dozens and dozens of players that we're going to see in the Copa are going to be playing on U.S. soil for their countries after, you know, playing for clubs in MLS. And I think that's the way it should be. Look at the NBA. We want the NBA to be where players come to get exposure, to make money, to win championships. And you only get that when the soccer and the basketball are of the highest quality. We're not quite there on the MLS side, but it gets better and better and better every year. This year's Champions Cup, Champions League final notwithstanding.
There you have it. There is all the NBA soccer news. Now into predictions. Mavericks at Celtics. Who takes the series? How much do they win by? Hal?
I can't believe the Celtics will win without making it uncomfortable. So 7 games. Celtics in 7.
7 games. That should be a good series. Yeah. Edmonton, Florida Panthers.
Oilers in 6.
USA versus Colombia friendly before the Copa America.
Oh, good one. Well, have you seen Colombia play of late? I've not.
I've seen a little bit. There have been they're better than like the previous cycle. They got Luis Diaz.
Right.
That's probably the only guy you have to worry about. And I think we could beat them, to be honest.
Yeah, I might. That's a friendly, and if they can win that game, I think they're going to have a lot of confidence. And if they lose it, they're going to probably play more defensively against Bolivia, which is the first match, and that's the first real match, and that's such a huge match. They have to win that one.
Must win.
What the hell? I'm a homer. I'm going to pick the U.S. 2-0.
2-0 against Colombia. Yeah. Like, people were saying USA needs to win a big game. And I think the first opportunity is Uruguay in that group match. If they can beat them, confidence will grow. Oh,
it's huge. It's huge. And if they don't win that match, do they get to the semis? Probably not. And is Berhalter get hired for the rest of the, does he keep his job? I don't think so. So we'll see. Lots of games.
Especially when Jesse March has been hired for the Canada coach.
Oh, I love that. I can't wait to see the Copa. And I'd just kill for that match to actually happen in the quarters to see those two teams face off again. And those two coaches, that's been so much fun.
Yeah. By the way, USA Colombia will be at Hanover Stadium, Hanover, Maryland, and FedEx Field. Right near DC, so that would
what day is that? And
it's on Saturday, June 8th, and it's on TNT.
Saturday, June 8th, that's coming right up
this weekend. Saturday, yep.
Oh, that's appointment viewing. I need to watch that game,
yeah. Because I mean, there's gonna be a lot of A squad players starting for sure.
And I don't agree with you that Diaz is the only Colombian that we have.
He's the one that sticks out the most, in my opinion.
Well, he plays in England. I'm sure they've got tons of guys who are great who are playing for Nacional or Internacional, and I just don't know who they are. So
yeah.
I'm just assuming they're good because they're always good.
Yeah, they're always good and tricky for us. Anyways, Hal, what is the best way to reach you online? Talk to you about the U.S. men's back in the day in 89.
Back right there at that website is my companion site for Generation Zero, Founding Fathers, Hidden Histories, and the Making of Soccer in America. That's also my my Threads handle and my Instagram handle. So check me out there.
And you can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on X and Instagram. We'll be live tweeting this weekend, NBA and some football. So pretty exciting. The year of sports doesn't stop. I think August stops. No, August Premier League starts again. So it doesn't really take a break anywhere. Oh, gosh. All right, Hal, thanks for coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi. Cheers.
This was really-